Hello, a very good Saturday morning. It's the weekend edition once again here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. Coming up on this programme, we'll be going live to Paris to get the very latest on the investigation into the terror attacks in France, with the focus now on finding an accomplice, the girlfriend of one of the gunmen. Former Donegal Youth Councillor Louise Boyle has been recognised for her work in highlighting mental health issues. We'll hear her story. It's 40 years since six men lost their lives in the Evelyn Marie fishing disaster. I'll chat to one of the Garda divers who was involved in the search and has since made strong connections with the families of those bereaved, or the bereaved families. And we'll also hear of a new drive to attract filmmakers to County Donegal. This and much more, including your calls, comments, requests via text to 086 770 0055, or by phone to Yvonne on 074 91 25000. And if you're on Twitter, you can tweet me directly at Greg Hughes 2. Okay, so that's just a sample of what we have for you between now and 12 noon. Much more besides, but first and foremost, we're joined in studio to discuss the week's news in general with Claudia Kennedy. Claudia, you're very welcome back to the programme.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for having me back.
Happy New Year, I suppose, although it's nearly the middle of the year. How was your Christmas?
Good? It was lovely, very quiet. Great to be back at home in Bundoran. So, yeah, lovely Christmas.
Superb. Right, we'll kick on with the newspapers. The front page is dominated by the story from France. As I say, we'll be speaking a little bit more on that to a journalist who's over in Paris. But your reflections on it?
Well, I'm going to begin here with the Irish Independent, Greg, and it's a very sad, harrowing story, and it's very distressing as you read through the events. Yesterday, as we know, in Paris, they had the end to the siege. Four hostages were killed yesterday, with the three gunmen also killed. And in total, Greg, we've had 20 people were held during two coordinated sieges by members of the same terrorist cell. Now, I think that's very important. Two of the gunmen were brothers that were behind the horrendous massacre on Wednesday at the magazine Charlie Hebdo. But I think really what we're looking at here is a very coordinated approach from this terrorist group. I think, in my opinion, for the French security forces should have been more proactive. And I believe the two brothers were actually known to them, but the fact that they weren't a major threat. So I think they have failed in that respect.
And the younger the younger brother was on a British no-fly list as well, as far as I'm aware. And since then, Al-Qaeda have claimed credit for it. They say they were responsible for it. But this is a type of terrorism that's very, very difficult to counteract. I know you referred there to the security services and perhaps what they should have known, but this is not necessarily massively organised, you know, like 9-11 or the bombings that we've seen in the past. This is individuals, a small group of individuals that are being recruited and motivated. And with the best will in the world, it's hard to counteract that, is it?
To a certain extent it is. However, these two brothers in particular were known to security forces, and they had actually served time in jail with a key Islamic leader named Salem Bayaming. And he was regarded by the US authorities as one of the principal organisers in Syria. Now, I think that's very, very, very significant. And the French security officials were aware of this, but they felt that they were older and therefore less of a threat. So it was nearly on an age level that they felt that there wouldn't be a threat. But the fact that they had these very clear links to Al-Qaeda, and particularly to such a high-profile Islamic leader such as Salem Bayaming, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, that is very significant. So I do think that they failed in reference to that information, Greg.
It amazes me, and perhaps naively, that people are prepared to go to these lengths, that young men in particular, and there's a young woman involved as well, are capable of being recruited, to capable of having their mindset in such a way that they are really quite prepared to die. And that's the danger here, because these brothers and their accomplice too have no fear of death whatsoever, and indeed they believe death is a reward. So is this a problem that's going to worsen and grow?
It's chilling, and particularly when you look at France, that would have been a former colonial power with its historical colonial forays into North Africa, and these two brothers were of Algerian descent. There's a huge social problem as well in this, in the sense that they were living in an Arab ghetto, and it was dominated by poverty, deprivation, lack of education, lack of employment, and those very young men are very vulnerable to these particular Islamic brainwashing, if you like, cells, and that the way that they work, and particularly getting involved in a life of crime. So I think that's a huge issue in terms of a social issue. It's very important that we would integrate a lot of these immigrants.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you? Well, we'd not take French because it could be in every country. You know, we've heard that there are people connected to ISIS and Al-Qaeda living on this island. So we don't want to sort of almost say it's their problem and not ours.
It's an international problem.
Yeah, exactly. But the point I was going to make as it relates to that, which is just escaped me at the moment. Yeah, this is it. You know, this moves towards and people feeling that if you are moving into a country with an established culture, for you to live and reside and work in that, then you have to adopt the culture of that country. Do you think that's the way it's going? In other words, you talked about them living in ghettos within France. Mm-hmm. That obviously points then to an integration issue.
Oh, definitely. I think particularly just looking at the French situation, this particular situation with these particular terrorists. And I have to say that most of the newspapers today go into a huge amount of detail into both of the brothers' backgrounds that were adopted as young children and then were adopted into an Islamic family as well. But what they really focus on is the sense of this idea of hopelessness, mm-hmm. no future, lack of employment. And particularly within the Irish Independent today, they do a whole profile of these very young men that feel totally isolated from all types of structures in society.
And the likes of Al-Qaeda then are giving them something to live for.
Yeah, well, they make them very vulnerable to right. the likes of the Al-Qaeda.
Okay, 086-77-00-555. Text the show or call us on 074-91-25000. We're taking your calls now. We'll be speaking, as I said, later to a journalist over there just to get a sense of what it's like on the ground and how the French people themselves, their mindset and how they're being affected by this. Do you want to stick with that story? We're moving
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I think there's more to this as well. And I think I want to really commend all of people within Ireland and all of us that stand in solidarity with those poor families. And my deepest sympathies go to those families that are actually burying their relatives today from the horrendous massacre on Wednesday. And it's absolutely chilling, Greg, when you see the photographs, when you see the pictures. And this is about freedom of expression as well. And it's about people being allowed to print what they need to do so in a respectful manner, but giving everybody that opportunity
to have
a voice.
Well, when you say in a respective manner, what do you mean? Because to a lot of people that follow Islam, to see the spiritual leader of that kissing another man in cartoon form, for an example, is not respectful, is it?
Well, we've had a number of Islamic leaders within Ireland this week, and they've spoken out and said that obviously they were not happy with it, but that the actions that were taken by these terrorists were absolutely
dreadful. Of course.
No, and
yeah,
I want to point out,
you just mentioned the word respectful, and I just wanted to get an idea of what you see as respectful.
But I want to also point out, which is very important here, that there is the vast majority of Islam, Muslim people that do not condone terrorism, that do not condone the events that happened in France this week. And my fear is that a lot of those people throughout the world, not just within Europe, but right across the world, that would suffer the backlash mm-hmm. of society. And I think there needs to be a balanced approach towards this as well.
Do you think we need to repeal our blasphemy law?
Now, Simon Coveney this week has been the only government minister that has come out to talk about this. And had those cartoons been printed in Ireland, the Muslim community would have had that opportunity mm-hmm. where they could have actually invoked that blasphemy law. And as a result of that blasphemy law, it's quite interesting that a lot of Islam imams have come out this week to say that they feel a lot safer within Ireland. They feel a lot more welcomed in Ireland because that law is there.
And do you support that law, the blasphemy law?
I do think it has a role within society.
You'd be in favour of it staying in situ?
I think it needs to be looked at in terms of maybe the wording and within society. Don't forget we have social media, something we did not have when that law mm-hmm. was brought into place. So the wording of it may need to be looked at. But I think in terms of what it has done within Ireland, this week it has brought calm. It has brought a very balanced conversation. It has brought many people from the Muslim community to feel comfortable that they come out to speak and say, we do not agree with terrorism. We do not agree with what happened in France. We feel that it is an absolute atrocity. It was a massacre. It was quite sickening to see those horrendous images of what happened on Wednesday. So the fact that within Ireland that they have that space, that they can feel comfortable as law-abiding citizens to come out and say, we are Islamic, we feel safe here, and we do not agree with the terrorism that's been done within our name. And I think that's very clear, and that needs to be looked at, that people that are a part of this religion, that they do not feel that they're going to suffer the backlash.
Do you not think then an Irish magazine should have the right then to publish these cartoons on its front page?
Well, if you're looking at the Irish context...
Well, that's freedom of speech, isn't it? That's freedom of expression.
If you're looking at the Irish context as it stands at the moment, that law actually is in place. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a legislator. I don't legislate. That is in place, and that's up to our government to look at that. Quite interestingly, there was only one government minister, and that was Simon Coveney, that came out to speak on that issue this week. The others did not. Now, I would like to commend Enda Kenny this week, and he's spoken... with great empathy as well, and he was in Dublin this week and he was signing the book of condolences at the French embassy, and I think it's very important for us as Irish people that we are standing in solidarity with the French people. I know that the National Membership of Union of Journalists today are holding a ceremony in Dublin Castle as well, and our memories and our thoughts are with those families that are suffering today.
And that puts me in mind, and we'll switch off that subject if you don't mind, of the massive reaction last month in the run-up to Christmas when a gentleman was found dead, a homeless man was found dead outside the Dáil, effectively, on a step. He had frozen to death or died of natural causes in very bad conditions at the very least. At that point, Fianna Fáil leader Sinn Féin were out. Enda Kenny went out overnight to... see firsthand the homelessness situation. There was absolute uproar. The night before last, a 50-year-old Polish gentleman died in very similar circumstances in Temple Bar.
Correct.
Nothing. Why is that? Is that hypocrisy from our legislators? Why is no one up in arms? Is it because he's a foreign national? Is it because it's not approaching Christmas?
Well, I would agree with you. And I, the fact of the matter is, I'm here on the Sun newspaper and it's made page 14. And I agree, on the news last night, it got a 2-minute little slot. Very little has been said about it. I would agree. I think it was very hypocritical of our political representatives to do what they did. Now, while it was done with the best will in the world, I am sure when they went out to see the devastation of homelessness and the results of homelessness, and there was a concerted effort to get beds for one night only. Now, they did talk about that last night, that that procedure is in place, but it's not enough, and there needs to be a long-term solution. But I would agree, I think, had this poor unfortunate man perhaps passed away outside the Dáil, if it was a second death outside the Dáil, there probably
so
would have
we're
been
talking
more of an uproar.
In other words, it's geographical. A life means more if it's closer to the Parliament. I mean, there's a serious question that has to be asked of our political leaders, and I'm not meaning the government, I mean all of them, in that why is this not a national scandal? Are they only reacting to public outrage, or should they not be leading that reaction? And we have a very reactionary system here, don't we?
I agree. I really do believe we have a reactionary system within the Irish political system. And the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Mr. Christy Burke, who has been excellent on this issue, and I have to give him praise, because he is one of those soldiers that is out every night for the past 20 years with food and blankets and trying to help those people that are suffering from homelessness. And it's also a bigger social issue as well, Greg. A lot of homeless people are suffering from mental health issues. They're suffering from addiction issues. They have a lot of fear of going into hostels, even if it is only for one night. So there needs to be a coordinated approach with services as well. But I absolutely agree. It is shocking. I feel the government should have been on this. I feel that there should have been a bigger, if you like, response within the public and within the media as well.
I just wonder, do people sit at home and go, oh, well, this one's not really, no one really minds about this one, so we'll say nothing. That's my concern. You know, that's the way it seems to be. But look, we have to move on because time is marching on. You tune to the Weekend Edition here in Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes, talking to Claudia Kennedy this morning about the news. 086 77 00 555 if you want to text us now, or you can call Yvonne on 07491 25000. And you're very welcome back. This week, it was a national crisis for the first time ever. Over 600 people, either on trolleys in or in wards, waiting for treatment in hospital. Locally, 31 was the peak in Letterkenny. It dropped somewhat to 27, then down to 24. We're waiting on the figures for today. Claudia Kennedy, what's your take on it?
Well, I think this is shocking. I would much have preferred to see our Minister for Health coming out and speaking on this issue. I feel
well, he was in Florida, you see.
Yes, and that is my problem. He should have been in Ireland. He should have been dealing with this very, very serious issue. And if you remember, Greg, we had discussed a little bit of this in October in our last show, where there is a massive crisis at the moment within the HSC, and there is a total lack of leadership, particularly within the Department of Health and particularly with our Minister for Health. And even yesterday, it was so bad that it took the nurse nurses of Beaumont Hospital to actually to have to go out and protest and actually highlight for the public the shocking, shocking conditions that we are seeing very vulnerable patients in. Patients, Greg, sitting up to 40 hours waiting to see a doctor.
Yeah, well, just for clarity and just to explain these figures a little bit, if we take the 31 figure at Letterkenny General Hospital, which was the peak on Tuesday, I think, this isn't people, these aren't people who've just gone into the hospital and then they're counted. These are people, as far as I'm aware, and I'm open to correction, but I think I'm correct on this one, these are people that have actually already been assessed by a health professional, and that health professional has determined that they need to be admitted.
Yes.
So these aren't just people that have, you know, sometimes I think people think these are just people that are sitting in A&E and they count them and that's how... It's not. These are actually people that have been assessed by a medical professional, and that medical professional said these people need to be put into a bed. So then you have 31 people that are sick enough that they need to be admitted to a bed.
Yes.
But they're actually either sitting on a chair in a ward or on a trolley, what have you. Now, why do people not seem angry about this? You know, I think the general society doesn't seem angry. They don't. It's not as motive as water, for instance. There was far more about water meters going in on social media and what have you. There was a lot more about water meters going in Letterkenny than there was 31 people sitting and lying on trolleys. Why is that?
I think unless that you're in that situation and you're experiencing the hardship of being in that A&E department, that you're seeing the chaotic situation that nurses are finding themselves in, where patients are becoming disorientated and their health is being put at risk. And I think also just for the general public to get that information out there. And I think in fairness to our nurses, they have done a fantastic job. They've actually had to go out onto the front line, on the picket line, and communicate with the media to get this point across. So I think for a lot of people within the public, unless you're in that proximity and going through that dreadful
situation. Unless you're directly affected effectively.
Yes, yeah. Now, one of the big things really that we looked at as well, and I suppose it's the most important thing with health, is their budget. And our Minister for Health has cut 200 million out of hospital acute services, Greg. And that's very, very serious. And furthermore, there are many wards in hospitals up and down this country that are now closed. There are beds available.
But that's not
that
the problem.
Be used.
The problem is bed blockers. The problem is people that can be discharged from hospital, but there's a lack of space in community hospitals and a lack of packages for people to be able to go back to their own home to be. So it's not necessarily about beds in hospitals, and it's not necessarily about staff in hospitals.
My understanding is, and I've spoken with a number of medical professionals before I came on here today, my understanding is, from talking with them, is yes, there is a problem with a lack of nurses available to actually man those beds. So if the embargo was lifted, and if nurses could be employed directly within local hospitals to see to those patients and to use those beds, and there is also, I agree with you, there is also the issue of our community hospitals receiving funding and having those step down facilities available, such as Lifford Community Hospital, such as St Joseph's Community Hospital in Stranoller. They're two very good examples that if they could receive the funding and the staffing levels available, they would be a fantastic solution to this situation.
Well, that's been highlighted to some extent in a different area of health, in that this week it was confirmed that because of long-term absenteeism through ill health, the antenatal clinic in Dunloe has been closed, at least temporarily. Now, we already know that there is an issue with overcrowding at Letterkenny General.
Yes.
But because of the recruitment embargo, the antenatal clinic in Dunloe Community Hospital is now closed, and the women affected by that now have to come to Letterkenny. So we're actually doing the opposite, really, of arguably what we should be doing.
We really are, Greg. And it's absolutely devastating, and it's shocking, and it's a disgrace in the year 2015 and what we pay in taxes, that we do not have a service that's just even able to operate to meet those basic services for the public.
Leo Varadkar seems to think money's not the issue here.
I would disagree.
He's the Minister for Health.
Well, I would disagree with that. Of course he's going to say that, Greg, because he is in constant communication with the Department of Finance that is not willing to give him extra finance. And let's not forget, the former Minister for Health had a huge overspend to $510 million within the Department of Health. Now, in the last budget that they had for 2015, for this year, they had planned to give $25 million to make that available for step-down facilities. That has not been put in place, and in my opinion, that is not enough money. And the actual policy that they have in place within the Department of Health, which is named Future Health, they're actually looking at ways in which they can try and solve the situation. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, it just seems to be talk. They've debated this in the Dáil in October. In fact, Taoiseach Enda Kennedy, Kenny, in a debate with Micheál Martin, actually predicted this situation for January and February, and yet nothing has been done.
It happens every single year. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to predict it happening. But the issue we have, though, is that the health minister, as I say, you know, he seems to be pointing more to staff, certain staff within the health service needing to pull their weight more, and unions to allow extra beds on wards. Obviously, the INMO want a certain amount of beds on wards. The minister is saying, look, we need to put an extra one or two beds on each ward to help solve this problem. So everyone's going to have to put their shoulder to the wheel, though.
Well, there's two issues with this. We currently have 200 positions available within the HSE that have not been filled by consultants. So when you go into A&E and you need to be seen, there is actually not a consultant available because he has not been employed by the HSC. Now, in relation to the embargo and nurses being available to see you, and I didn't know this again until I did my research, that if a nurse needs to go on maternity leave, Greg, she is not replaced. Mm-hmm. The actual rota needs to be re-looked at and rejigged, and then everybody needs to pick up that extra work. Now, that is shocking. In every other discipline, I know particularly in teaching, that if somebody goes on maternity leave, that teacher will be replaced. One would believe that would happen also within the HSE, and it doesn't. Absolutely shocking. The other issue as well is when they're looking at replacing nurses, for example, if they need to look at maybe agency nurses, they actually go to a centralised system within Dublin, and they're working from the panel mm-hmm. from Dublin. So you could have wonderful qualified nurses available within Donegal to work, for example, in Letterkenny General Hospital, and they cannot be employed because they're going through this very arduous process of coming off the panel from Dublin.
Well, it's so simple in the teaching world, as you mentioned, you know, there does seem to be that smooth transition, mm-hmm. Even through sick leave. You wonder why in something so important as health, something similar could not be employed.
Yeah, and I just think common sense, where is common sense, Greg? We're talking about people's lives here. And our Minister for Health, I think, has been very, very poor on this issue this week. And what I've just heard him saying is given sound bites of, oh, it will get worse before it gets better. That is not what the Irish public want to hear.
Leo Varadkar's attitude seems to be that, you know, here's the cards, they're all on the table. Whereas at least James Riley, he stated, look, it's not going to be like this again. And in fairness, under his watch, it wasn't. Yeah. Right, moving on, if you don't mind, Claudia.
So I'm going to move on now to looking at the support of small to medium enterprises. And this has been a very difficult week within the Finn Valley with the closure of Jackson's Hotel. Barry and Margaret Jackson have done a wonderful job, fantastic job within the area, created employment, being a part of society. And it's just shocking this week that there has been no procedures in place to support that business, to support that family. And it's shocking, really, too, to think that within the small to medium enterprises, they are getting no support from banks. From
the impression I got that the family felt that they were doing everything that they could with the business to keep the bank off their backs, to put it in very basic terms. And Bank of Ireland obviously mm-hmm. then made a decision to come in themselves, appoint a receiver. Mm-hmm. It must be very difficult for the Jacksons family, I'd imagine, you know, if you do feel you're jumping through all the hoops that you can and you do see some light at the end of the tunnel and then the rug's pulled from under you.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, Greg, that, you know, we hear about this wonderful boom returning and Dublin is really coming back to a wonderful economy and that we have employment numbers up and we're getting back on track. That is not happening in Donegal. We are a rural county. We are not feeling the lift of this.
But let's move forward. You know, I just don't want us to be moaners here because, you know, we know what the problems are, mm-hmm. right? And I think it's accepted that the IDA do not visit Donegal enough. We have very few site visits last year once mm-hmm. again, but the information is not being released by the IDA, perhaps because they're somewhat embarrassed by it. But going forward, what do we do? What needs to be done? There needs to be a very united, strong case, I'd argue, a cross-party case put to
Absolutely.
Dublin on this.
Yes.
That politics for this on this issue is taken out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see that in health. Can you imagine if every deputy from Donegal stood up in the Dáil together to make this issue right across the board? Sinn Féin, Fine Gael can't, they're it might be slightly more difficult because they're under a party whip system, but wouldn't it be nice to see a united front for Donegal in the Dáil? Is that not why we elect people? We didn't elect people to to be separate. We it's the one county and it's all the one, you know, it should be.
I agree, Greg. And it's really about delivering for people within Donegal and having a very strong united voice for Donegal. And I think that we are very different up here in the sense that we are a rural county, we're a border county, and we are really struggling. And I think in terms of having that coordinated approach within the banking sector, there really needs to be more pressure put on banks to start opening up overdrafts, to start lending to small to medium enterprises, and to look at commercial banking as well. And that has not happened.
A lot of the time you can borrow money. The only people that can borrow money from banks are kind of arguably those that don't need it.
You true. Know, ironically, that is correct.
The bar is raised that so high. And then you have a recovering economy. So has prices are starting to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony of the situation is that, you know, we're going to see banks quicker to go in because they're more likely to recoup the money that, you know, if they're in some sort of agreement, because the, you know, so a recovering economy is good for the banks, but bad for those SMEs probably as well as homeowners and so on and so forth. You think the government needs to take some stronger leadership on this, and maybe
really
the industry
do.
Can lead themselves to some extent.
Well, I think particularly with our Minister for Finance, there needs to be more pressure put on these state-owned banks. I want to add that the taxpayers' money has gone into bailout, that revenue and that money needs to be made available to our small to medium enterprises, that they can pay wages, and that wages and money goes back into the local economy. And it benefits everybody, Greg, for the social fabric of society. Very
and just
important.
To be, I want to make it emphasised, just from the Jackson's Hotel perspective, it has been, it is continuing opened as a going concern. Staff remain employed, and deposits and bookings, as far as we've been informed, are being honoured. Just
the
last thing they
need
at this stage
that.
Is people cancelling and what have you, I'd imagine. For the staff, really, I'm talking
and
about
to commend them
point.
As well on their work ethic, and the staff and the family and what they have done there. And every one of us in the Finn Valley will be there to support them.
086 77 00 555 is the text line, or you can call Yvonne on 0749 125 000.
Now, the next issue I want to highlight that I feel it's important is the Convoy Community Text Alert Initiative.
This is to do with crime, is it?
Yes, and there will be a meeting in the Black Memorial Hall in Convoy on Wednesday. And really what they're looking at here is trying to make homeowners aware of how to protect your home, Greg, which is something that's very, very important. Things like, for example, closing your windows, making sure you lock your door, making sure that you have, if it's agricultural machinery, that it's locked away, that people can't see it. That if you're going away for the weekend, you don't put a status up on Facebook so that maybe criminals could know.
Yeah.
This is very, very important at this time of the year, and particularly for elderly people who may be living on their own. And also, the Gardaí have a wonderful article as well, in which they're highlighting to business owners to review their security of their businesses and really to be aware that everybody is vulnerable at this time of the year.
The text alert schemes across the country, and not least in Donegal, are working. They have worked.
They are.
And they have led to arrests and what have you. So that they're looking to set up a similar text alert scheme in Convoy as well as the advice that's given out
and
there.
And it's a wonderful initiative, and I think that's very, very significant in terms of protecting people in their homes.
A texter is curious if you had any engagement with Lucinda Creighton when she was up here.
No, I didn't, and actually that was the
were
next story.
Were you even called?
No, I was not, Greg.
Are you upset about that?
No, I am a proud member of Fianna Fáil. I am on the Fianna Fáil National Executive. I am 100% committed to Fianna Fáil.
Right. Would you have even met her if she'd...
No, my opinion is on this whole issue, I think Lucinda Creighton is a very talented, a very intelligent deputy. I think she's doing a very good job. And I really look towards Enda Kenny and his failure at leadership to lose such a capable woman as Lucinda Creighton. And on this issue, on voting on conscience, with regard to the abortion issue, in fairness to Micheál Martin, he allowed his deputies to go in there with a free vote on that issue of abortion, about free conscience. And I just look towards Enda Kenny, and his style of leadership is very
Well, Micheál Martin could do that, because with no disrespect to your party, whatever way he's voted, it wouldn't have put the vote up or down anyway. So it's very easy for him to score some points on that and say, look, it's a free vote.
But that's not the point, Greg. The point is that he actually allowed his deputies to do that.
It is a fact.
But he still allows deputies to do that.
He could have. Who's he to tell people how to vote?
He is the leader of the party. There is a whip system within Ireland.
I know that, but I mean, it's very easy for someone who's with a small party to score political points and say no whip. Sure, it makes no difference what way Fianna Fáil TDs voted.
Well, I would disagree with that, Greg.
We'll leave it there then.
Yes. In relation to this new party as well, there's going to be a big problem with funding. The other national parties get roughly around 18 million in funding from the taxpayer, I may add. So with Lucinda Creighton, it will take roughly 1 million euro just to get set up. At the moment, Greg, they don't have a name. They don't have policies. They don't seem to have a structure going forward. And I'm disappointed in that. I would have really expected more from her from that point of view.
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, what they were doing is they're kite flying. They're saying, look, we're going to be creating this new party in March. We need your support. We need candidates. You know, maybe they're doing it the right way. Do a soft launch and then have a full launch in March. She's obviously doing the rounds, engaging with various people around the country. And what's wrong with that? It's not going to put Fianna Fáil up or down. Sure, if they're going to take any votes off anyone, it'll be Fine Gael.
Well, let's not now presume what the public are going to do. The public will vote for whichever candidate they feel is best representative of them, Greg, and is going to work hard on the ground, and that's in contact with people and that can talk with people. That's very important as well. It's going to be an interesting development within Irish politics. That's the way I would look at it. And from Fianna Fáil and from our perspective, we're gearing up for the election. We're looking at conventions and we're also looking at the role of women within the party. We have a new commission set up and we're looking at roughly 27 to 30 women being run in the next general election.
In what?
Nationally.
Yeah, in Fianna Fáil. Yes. What is the amount you have to have?
30%.
And that would, what is the number then? So
for us, it'd be roughly 27 to 30. But it depends on each party and the total number of candidates.
Yeah. But this is a lot of grumpy old men in suits who won't want to be having to share the limelight with a woman. Are you going to be allowed to run, for instance?
Well, I sincerely hope so, Greg.
I'd say a few people would have an issue with that.
Well, again, it's very important the public is given a choice. And I think it's very important that women have a voice within Irish politics, Greg. I think it's vitally important that we can put our issues on the table, from things such as childcare to maternity leave to education. It's very important that our perspective is there.
Texter says, Greg, we recently set up a text alert system. So if Convoy need any help or advice, we'd be willing to advise. So if anyone from that Convoy group wants some extra expertise, get in contact with us and we'll put you in contact with the texter there. On the issue of health, if they reduce the amount of non-medical managers, they might have more money available in the system for something useful like beds, is another text. Keep your calls and comments coming through, 086 77 00 555. If you've never texted the radio before in your life, let today be the first time. Everyone's opinion is equal. Or call us on 0749 125 000. Right, wrap up time. You've done enough electioneering, so I think we can move forward, as your party leader would say, going forward.
Yes, we can. I would just like to say you're going to have Louise Boyle on later.
Yes.
Yes, I used to teach Louise and I would have served with her on the Finn Valley Mental Health Alliance. A fantastic girl who's done wonderful work in promoting positive mental health. And we're very proud of her in Finn Valley College. So proud to hear her name being read out there. And I'll be listening to her interview as well, Greg. Very positive and well done to Louise.
Speaking to her.
Yes.
Is that you concluded?
That's me.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Greg. It's
a pleasure to have you in, as always. And we'll speak to you in the not too distant future. Although, you know, if you are going to be running in the election, you know, Claudia, we might have to...
No, you wouldn't do that, Greg.
We might have to, in interest of fairness, Claudia, but sure, we'll see how things progress.
We'll see how things go.
But Claudia Kennedy there, of Fianna Fáil, teacher also, and... I'm joined on the programme now by Stefan de Vries, who's RTL correspondent for the Netherlands. But I understand, no, we've lost that call, so we'll get him back. We're going to be talking about, of course, the situation that's been evolving over the last week in France. Police are now hunting for the girlfriend of one of the three gunmen who brought 3 days of terror to France, saying she may be armed and dangerous. Hayat Boumediene is a suspect in the murder of a Paris policewoman on Thursday. She's on the run. All three gunmen were shot dead by officers following two separate hostage situations yesterday. Stefan de Vries, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us on the programme.
You're welcome. Good morning.
So yesterday was a culmination of a number of days of terror in and around Paris.
Yes, indeed. Almost 3 days with a lot of tension, a lot of pressure, very bloody incidents and an attack, several attacks that made the French fear for their safety, but also fear for the future of democracy. It has been three very strange days in Paris.
What has been the reaction amongst the people? Was this felt throughout Paris and beyond, or did the majority, as much as they can, get on with their business? I'm trying to sort of gauge the impact it had on a national level.
The impact was incredible. I've been living in Paris for 16 years. And I've never sensed something like this. Everybody was really was only talking about this. People were very concerned, also very angry about what happened, of course, and very sad. There were thousands and thousands of police officers and soldiers in the streets of Paris, which is a really rare sight. So you can imagine the ambience was very tense, and there were several small incidents the last couple of days. Some of them had nothing to do with the events, but it all added to a very strong feeling of fear and tension, and everybody was very, well, I wouldn't say nervous, but very concentrated on what was happening.
Well, what happens then is every little thing that you see or every event, you would imagine, I imagine, that you would think, well, is this connected? Is this terrorism? Am I in danger? Even, you know, things that we'd come across on an everyday basis.
Yeah, exactly. For instance, there was a car exploded in a suburb in Paris on Thursday night, which was just an accident in a garage. But when the information was being came to us, everybody thought immediately, of course, this is an attack again. And then yesterday, the events followed each other so quickly. It was very strange. And the whole France, I think nobody worked yesterday. Everybody probably was just scotched to their television sets or talking to friends or gathering in the streets. It was a very strange scene.
Some of the newspaper coverage here is already pointing to perhaps failings in the French security setup, in that they should have known this was coming, that you know some of these people were known to the authorities, were known to the security services. How is that being covered by the likes of yourself and generally in France, Stéphane?
Yeah, of course, after the first shock and awe on the 24 hours after the event, the political and also security debate already started. I'm not a security expert, but it's very difficult to monitor these kinds of criminals, because they are criminals, because these are people who are born and raised in France. Some of them had criminal records. One of them had already been in prison for his involvement in a jihadist cell 10 years ago, when he wanted to go to Iraq. This was long before the existence of the Islamic State, but still he was imprisoned. His brother, on the other hand, was not known to the security service, and they have been very discreet the last couple of years. And of course, if you live as a Frenchman or just a national in your own country where you have been born and raised, where you went to school, and you are very discreet, then it's very hard for intelligence services to monitor these people all the time. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the security advisors to President François Hollande told us that to follow one single individual 24 hours a day, to monitor whatever he does, it needs at least 15 people. So it means that if you have like 1,000 suspects, you need 15,000 people who are following these people.
And this is the problem we have, Stéphane, with the new approach by the likes of the Al-Qaeda and ISIS, in that I mentioned it earlier on in the programme. You know, in the past we've had major incidents like 9/11 and major bombing attempts and successful bombing attempts, tragically. It's very hard to track individuals with two men with two guns, and yet they can wreak such havoc.
Yeah, that's almost impossible, because in the past, let's say till 9/11, terrorism was usually a case of organizations with a very with a structure in place, with somebody managing everything. This is no longer the case. We have individuals, indeed, who have been radicalized, who have been influenced sometimes by, in this instance, it was Al-Qaeda Yemen who takes responsibility. So these people are just radicalized people who are acting on their own, or maybe two, three more people, but very small cells, and there's no hierarchy. So they probably didn't even receive the orders to do these attacks, and they acted on their own. So it's very difficult, unfortunately, to prevent these kinds of events.
Finally, Stefan, what does this mean to the political setup in France? Because once the dust settles, you know, there are perhaps you know right-wing people who use this or at least try to use this to their advantage. What does it mean to political stability or race relations generally in France, do you think?
Well, the tensions, of course, are pretty high. France is the highest Muslim population of Europe. It is also the highest Jewish population, the second after America and Israel of the world. So as soon as there are tensions in the Middle East, you see these tensions also in the streets of Paris. This is usual business. The situation of the last couple of months with IS and now these attacks, it has changed completely the way people are interacting. French Muslims are now fearing for their life. There have been a lot of incidents these weeks with shootings at mosques, graffiti on walls of mosques. Some people have been mugged, stuff like this. So there's a huge tension. And of course, there will be a political impact because Marine Le Pen, the leader of the right-wing party, the Front National, she has already said this week, I am the only party who was not responsible for this mess. I am the solution to all these problems. Vote for me in the next elections. And the next elections are in March already, regional elections. And she's doing very high, very well in the polls. She already was very high in the polls. And I am afraid the next couple of days, weeks, she will do even better. So yeah, it has a huge impact, not only on the people in the street, but also in politics.
Stefan de Vries, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It is very much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's Stefan de Vries there, who's an RTL correspondent from the Netherlands, who's working and living and speaking to us from Paris there. Calls and comments to 086 770 0055. Keep them coming in, 086 770 0055, or call us 0749 125000. Yvonne taking your calls there. Thank goodness Claudia has completed her moaning. I couldn't take much more, says one texter. But another says, well done, Claudia. It's young women like you we need for the future of this country. And caller says, what is the matter with the emergency department? Why can Scully's office move back there? Would this not save the hospital money? I'm not sure what that means, but perhaps someone who's listening does. Lucinda doesn't seem to have any policy. And what's the deal with the no-name party, says a texter. And another, what does Claudia think about Enda Kenny becoming a world leader along with Obama? Well, I think I could guess that one, seeing that she's Fianna Fáil through and through. And Enda Kenny, of course, is Fine Gael. OK, it's the weekend edition here on Highland Radio, Ireland's number one radio station, local radio station today. Hope you're enjoying the programme so far.